Welcome to Career Tools. This week's guidance, talking about sensitive topics, part two. Here we go. This podcast answers these questions. What are things I should avoid talking about at work? Why should I avoid talking about those things at work? What are good topics to talk about at work? All this and more in one of my favorite casts. If you're a director, you need roadmap. You need to be able to see whether or not your managers are rolling out one-on-ones and feedback and coaching and delegation. You can drill down with roadmap, if you've got it and your direct managers have it, to see how they're doing and what they're doing, and keep apprised of how they're doing such that you can talk to them about it. Hopefully, it'll be positive feedback. Check out roadmap.
Last week we left off, we were talking about whether or not you should ask someone if they did anything with their husband over the weekend. And that's an assumption that people have husbands, not necessarily, and what they might be doing with that person. And we're going to carry on talking about weekends. One way of not asking people about who they were with at a weekend is to just ask them about the activity. So did you have fun over the weekend? Did you do anything interesting? It doesn't assume that couples are doing things together when maybe they would rather be doing things together or whatever. Another way of doing this is sometimes people will tell you like how long they've been together or something, and you can use activity to redirect, like, oh, you've been together a long time. I wonder if do you like to play golf? Do you like to play tennis? Do you like walking? Something like that. And then the person, if you say, do you, the person can decide whether that means them, themselves, or them and their family, or them and a spouse, or them and any other combination that works for them.
Yes. You know, it occurs to me as we're starting part two of this that there are people listening, and I think it's safe to say younger people, no offense, folks, I was younger once, that they're realizing, wow, this is hard. There's all kinds of sensitive topics. And I think you're right. And I think what we're trying to, no, I know what we're trying to communicate here is in professional life, there are some things where it's helpful to be sensitive. Your professional colleagues, your boss, your peers, your subordinates are not your friends. You don't get to have chatty texts with them in all cases without a sensitivity toward the fact that people are different, and a diverse workplace means different mores, different standards, and so on. And you can't then say, oh, the workplace makes it hard. No, it's part of being professional. Part of being a professional is not just professional maturity, includes emotional maturity and interpersonal maturity, which includes a certain sensitivity. And I would argue that if we're frustrating you a little bit, at least we're the ones telling you. What we don't want to have happen is for you to, with no ill intent, which is always the way it is, say something that's hurtful to somebody else. We're not generally in favor of political correctness. We are in favor of learning how to interact with someone and learning the phrases to use that are appropriate and polite and inquiring without stepping into the minefield. This is part of growing up, frankly, and learning that how you feel is not always to be expressed. And there's a higher standard that you don't get to express as much at work. Now, that may frustrate people. They say, well, you know, I wish it were like my friends. Yeah, I wish I were a billionaire, but I'm not. So if wishes were horses, beggars would ride, as my mother used to say.
And my mother, too. That whole authenticity thing. I feel this, therefore I must say it. That is not a good thing.
Yes.
It's not authentic. More than anything, it's usually hurtful.
Yeah, and because I feel it, therefore it is valid. It is valid if you feel it. But validity is only internal at that point. If it's valid to you to feel it, and therefore you get upset when somebody else gets upset because you violated a reasonably well-established professional standard of courtesies and comportment, you're at fault. And you feeling that, well, what I was feeling was valid is no defense. Right? You don't get paid for what you feel. You don't get paid for what you think. You don't even get paid for what you do. You get paid for the value of the results of what you do. And part of what you're paid for in the workplace is contributing to the overall success of the organization. I tell people all the time, you pay a tax to work in an organization. Organizations are not free from individual choices. By working together, organizations massively magnify human potential. as I've said before many times on our podcasts and our guidance over the last 13 years, I've said that sociologists generally agree that the greatest achievement of mankind is large organizations. In order to get the benefit of what large organizations allow us to do through specialization of labor, you have to pay an individual tax. You don't get to do everything the way you want to do. You have to make adjustments. You have to over-communicate about your work. Your work doesn't count unless it's communicated to somebody else. And you have to rein in some of your natural emotional or interpersonal tendencies out of respect for the fact that you work in a complex and diverse workplace. I know it makes it harder, but somebody has to say it, right?
And if anyone was going to say it, it would be us.
Yes, because I don't care what people think of me as long as I can console myself with being right. Okay. And, you know, I'm absolutely certain that I have less friends because of the things I say on the podcast, but I want you guys to be successful and don't make the mistakes that I did. Don't do that. Don't make the mistakes that Mike did or that Wendy did or that Maggie did or Kate or Sarah or Judy or anybody else here.
That's why we do this, right? Save you from yourself.
Yeah. The person we used to be when we made those mistakes. Don't learn from the experience of hard knocks. Okay.
So we're talking about relationships. One other thing that happens in relationships, people get divorced, which is terribly sad in most occasions. If somebody says, I'm getting divorced, the answer is not why, what's going on.
I don't think why is what comes out of people's mouth. I know that's what's in their head, but what comes out of the mouth is, oh, what happened? Which, folks, that's rude. Even to a friend. You know, even if it's somebody who you think of as a close colleague and a friend, you don't start that way. You start with, I'm so sorry to hear that. You express concern for the person, okay? But you don't ask for details. If they choose to offer them, you can respond in a respectful, caring way. But I have to tell you, if you start listening to some of the conversations that occur, and a classic example for classic behavioral example source for a lot of people is media, and TV is a good example. Whether you're binge watching or watching on your phone or watching a broadcast or watching a cable TV show or Netflix or the BBC or anything else, they want there to be drama, tension, and conflict when you're looking at a screen and watching something that advertises itself as drama. So people in the drama ask questions to cause more dramatic things to be said. But when someone starts a conversation with something dramatic, you don't want to add more to that. And I would argue that when you say what happened, you're putting yourself above the other person. You're saying, I want to know. Why make them relive it? Why make them admit an embarrassing thing? And in fact, this is a classic case where the idea of a social lie occurs, that if heaven forbid there was something really, truly difficult in the relationship, that person isn't obligated to share that difficult thing with you. So now you've put them in a situation through your personal curiosity, which is about you and not about them, to have to tell you a social lie. And then when you talk to a friend later and you say, oh, I don't know if you heard, but Brenda's gotten divorced. She told me X. And then you hear from another friend, oh, I actually heard it was Y. Now there's a whole discussion going on about the divorce, rather than a moment of reflection, prayer, if you choose, or contemplation about the person's difficulty. Maybe your thought ought to be, what can I do to help them? And I don't mean going to their house, although if you're close to somebody, that may in fact be true, but rather, what can I do to help them at work? For instance, hey, if you need me to step up, do some stuff for you, happy to do it, right? As opposed to, tell me what happened. I want to know.
Yeah, just don't ask for details. And one thing that people don't often think about is when people are going through bad times, they often come to work hoping to escape whatever it is they're going through. Work is a place where they can feel confident and competent. They get things done. They feel like they know what's going on. There's some control. And they don't want to talk about whatever it is that's going on. And by you saying, what happened? Why? You know, and asking a bunch of questions, you're just making their life worse. And why would you do that to someone you purport to like?
And I think we've already made this point like five times, but I'm going to, you know, as Churchill says, when you have a point to make, hit it and then hit it again with a great big whack. When you ask and you cause them to have to relive it and get perhaps emotional about it, you don't get to then say to a third party who says, boy, I probably wouldn't have asked that question. You probably put it through a bad moment or put him through a bad moment there. But I did it out of caring. Your intent doesn't matter. It doesn't. What matters is, in this case, your behavior. And in fact, your intent of concern, of care, of sorrow, of true compassion for the other person still exists inside you without having to express it by making things worse for them. You don't get credit for your compassion because at that moment, it's not about you. I mean, I think that's in defense of the idea that some people say, well, Mark, if I don't, you know, Wendy, if I don't keep asking, if I don't probe about something that important, maybe people will think that I don't actually care. But look, you can address that easily enough. You can say, look, I'm so sorry to hear that. I care about you. I respect you. And I want to give you privacy around sensitive topics. I don't want you to pry. You know what? You can rely on me. I'll step up and do whatever I can to help you through this. And I don't want to pry. Don't then say, so whatever you'd like to share, I'm happy to hear. Don't do that. Tell them you care, you're concerned. Express that in an emotional tone of voice that's respectful. And then also say, and I don't want to pry. If they choose to share after that, that's fine. And it'd be totally okay to say, look, I also respect their boundaries. Good example. Would you have the same conversation with a peer who's a friend versus a subordinate versus a boss? I would argue they're slightly different. And you might think, no, human compassion is the same for everybody. Actually, no, in an organization, there are sensitivities that are worth considering.
They're all different, even though it's two people, right?
Yep.
The relationship matters.
Yeah. Okay, what's next?
Okay, next we have people's physical appearance. And people think that compliments like you look cute or you look good today are positive additions to a conversation. And they are if you're outside of work, right? But the problem with saying things like that at work is you're complimenting someone's physicality and not their work. And whether someone is beautiful or not has no relevance to their ability to do the work, right? And be successful at it. If I were a princess looking girl and all people had ever said to me was, oh, you look so pretty today, I'd be annoyed because I've got a brain and I'm using it. And I don't want you to concentrate on the fact that I'm a girl and I'm pretty and I've got blonde hair. I want you to look at my work. And that's why these kind of compliments don't go over as well as you think they do.
It's a long since, I'm sure it's out of print, but 20 years ago, a guy who was a columnist in Fortune magazine, I think his name's Stanley Bing, wrote a book called You Look Nice Today, which was a compliment paid by a male boss to a female subordinate, which then led to, it's a fiction story, but it's about corporate mores and human resources and unintended consequences of politeness, but it ends up being HR's involved and he gets fired for perception issues. If you can't make a compliment about someone's physical appearance be a professional compliment, like you look sharp, okay? There's a big difference, folks, between you look nice and you look sharp. If you don't know that, that's the kind of subtlety you learn when you get older. You look sharp today. Or, I know you're making a presentation. That is a great look for this presentation, okay? But it's not because they're pretty or they're tall or their hair is done nicely, but rather they're presenting the right professional appearance to get the most work done. And this is not to say that the workplace is devoid of us being aware of other people and how they look, but there's a difference between what you know and what you think and what you say. And if you feel like this is a little bit of a minefield, it is, but it's not for those people who are gracious and polite. And polite professionals don't say, you look great today.
Yes.
Right? That feels like a personal comment. And if you say that to one person twice and you never say it to somebody else, you're essentially discriminating on the basis of looks rather than on professional comportment, which is not good.
It's a slippery slope, very easily that you start with all the best intentions and you get to a really bad place very quickly.
Yeah. And I found, particularly with people who are a little bit professionally immature, if they have the best of intentions and they say something that they had no intention to mean in any way that could be taken the wrong way, when it's taken the wrong way, they are very quick and perhaps a little bit hot to defend their intent. Unfortunately, in the court of HR, not that it often goes that far. That's not a defense, unfortunately.
So for women, you probably know this, but we're going to say it anyway. Don't ask when are you due or when are you expect. Are you expecting if you think that a lady is pregnant? Well, if she's not, that makes her feel bad. And if she is, then you're commenting on something personal and not her work. Why would whether or not someone was pregnant have an effect on whether or not the report that she just wrote was any good? And people want to ask the question because they want to be in the know. They want to be the person who knows that someone's pregnant and nobody else knows because it's still a secret, you know, and they want to say something nice.
Yeah.
And all of those things are about what you want and not about a sensitivity to the person, the other person's feelings.
The worst thing that can happen is you've been told by a third party that someone is pregnant. You know it for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
You've known them for 2 years. You know what they normally look like. You know what a pregnancy looks like. And in my experience, Wendy, most people believe they can tell the difference between somebody who's pregnant and somebody who's not. Separate from that, because we don't think we can convince you that you might be wrong. People just roll their eyes at that. It's simple. You're working with someone. Their work is what matters, and their ethics and their professionalism and their kindness and so on, which is unrelated to their body state. And you notice, but there's a difference between knowing in your head and saying something. So you wait for them to say something. And by the way, I never forget a boss, and this was after I left Procter & Gamble, a person who was somebody who outranked me quite a bit said, you know, I'm pregnant. And I said, well, the fact that I know it doesn't mean I should say anything to you. But now that you've said so, I hope you're well. I hope everything turns out well. And you'll notice I'm not asking more questions. You know, is it a boy? Is it a girl? Is it twins? When are you due? How's everything going? All because I'm going to rely on the other person to broach those subjects. Simple. And I would argue that the person standing next to me that asks a bunch of questions runs some risks, as we made clear for the 10th time in this cast, but they cannot honestly say that they feel more concerned, more caring, more compassion for that person than I do. If they want to ask a bunch of questions, if they want to probe about it, they want to prove to the other person. I don't think my emotions, my concern and care and compassion for another person need to be shown to be true. The fact is, I feel those things, but I'm socially aware enough and I don't wish to be inept, and so I won't ask. I won't ask at all. Now, I might, if someone is very clearly pregnant in the 8th month or something, I might allow them to choose their seat at a table slightly differently out of respect for, it's almost as if they're having trouble moving around the way somebody with a broken leg would have trouble moving around.
Exactly.
But I don't start the conversation. I'm aware and I don't say anything until they broach the subject. And then I express care, concern, compassion, and leave it at that and let them decide how far the conversation's going to go.
Absolutely. And again, I really wish we weren't saying this. Or I wasn't. I think I want to believe that everybody knows this, but I'm going to say it anyway. If a woman is pregnant, don't touch the baby bump. Just don't. Like, you don't go up to men and go, oh, nice belly there, and poke them in their belly.
Yeah.
You don't touch women there ordinarily, and just because there's a baby in there doesn't mean you can. So don't.
To a litigious person, that's assault and battery.
Yes.
Which ought to get raise some eyebrows. Assault is actually starting to, and battery is actually the physical touching. So, and as I said before, there's also a big difference between comments about how someone looks and a compliment about what they're wearing, right?
Yeah, I love your earrings. I love your shoes. I like that suit. Looks good on you. Is about the item and the way they're wearing it and the fact that they picked it out and it's appropriate to the environment and those kind of things.
Yeah. I make it even easier on myself that I don't believe that anybody necessarily cares more, whether they try to show it or not, about their colleagues. But I found it's just easier to say, you look sharp, or you look professional, or you look ready. Because again, that's about professional comportment and behavior and demeanor and not about physicality. Now, you mentioned pregnancy. So let's take that a step further. What about family plans?
Family plans. And again, the things we say about people's family are an intention to create a connection or to say something positive. And we don't intend to hurt people.
Doesn't matter. I don't care.
Doesn't matter, right? But because we don't know the circumstances of somebody's family plans, you can be really unintentionally hurtful. Like, everybody understands that people get married, and when people get married, children appear. It's, you know, that's what happens in 80% of cases. I know it's high. Like, not having children is unusual.
The odds are in your favor, but societal mores are not.
Yes, exactly. So you're not somebody's grandmother. You don't have to ask them, when am I getting grandchildren? When am I getting great-grandchildren?
The top 10 most selfish things that people who are old enough to be grandparents ask or say. So my son got married, and the first thing I said to my daughter-in-law is, hey, when are grandbabies coming along? Oh, my God. I mean, just gauche, just beyond. And people are like, I would have done that 50 years ago. Yeah, but not in the workplace. And this is not for 50 years ago. This is for today.
Today and at work. One example, somebody tells you they have two girls, and people say, I bet you're trying for a boy. But what if that person desperately wanted a boy and couldn't have any more children, or didn't want boys for some reason and is happy to have girls, and, you know, that's not something that's socially acceptable, or both were unintentional? There's all sorts of things that goes on. It's not about, a girl or a boy appeared. That's, you know, there's all sorts of other things.
You were telling me about a friend of yours who is of childbearing age, and everybody likes her, and she gets comments about how great a mother she'd be?
Yes, and she would have been. She is a great person. And her husband tried for 10 years to have children, and they weren't blessed with any. And every single time someone says, you'd be a great mother, it hurts every time, because she wishes she were.
And this is a strong person, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're getting to the heart of the matter there. Not a good way to be. And, totally unintentional. And so when you go to your buddy afterwards and says, I compliment her on being a great mother, and she had this look on her face, and suddenly the conversation went south. How rude of her. Actually, probably wouldn't say that if it was a guy talking to another guy, he'd say something rude. I mean, inappropriate, that I won't say on air. And now you're just compounding your error. You are the one at fault. And it would be appropriate to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think we've covered this, but we're going to say it more clearly. You might think it's questions like these that social lies were invented. You know, the kind of thing that you say when the truth is unacceptable. So somebody might laugh and say, two girls is all I can handle. Or I like vacation too much to be a mother. And you'd be right, because
it's none of your business.
Those are the times when people tell a social lie. But if there's someone you're working with that you want to have a relationship with, that you're asking these questions because you'll tell us, I want to be friends with them, or I want to have a connection with them, you are putting them in a position where they have to lie to you. And why would you do that to someone you like?
Even with good intentions. I'll tell you something else. Let's go back to the different role relationships at work. I'm a manager of a female subordinate, and I come to work with her every day. I say this, guys, because many of you know that I haven't seen Judy, my admin, for once in the last 2 years, because we're a virtual company. Right now, I'm in California. Wendy's recording this in Texas. And I see my subordinate, and she comes in, and now she's clearly pregnant. She looks at me, she says, I think you've known for quite a while. You haven't said anything, so I just want to make it clear, Mark, I'm pregnant. Well, the first thing I'm going to say, because now the subject's in promotions, congratulations, I'm so excited for you. Now, I'm not going to say I did notice. I'm not. Yeah, I noticed, but there's a difference between what I think. And I'm going to say, I am so excited for you, so happy. I'll keep you in my prayers. And I'll leave it at that. And if they want to share more, like, it's twins, or actually difficult pregnancies run in my family, all those kind of things, I'm going to let them set the boundaries, and I'm going to respond in a totally polite way. And I'm going to earn the right for her to be able to say 3, 6, 9 months later, my boss was totally supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do that without probing, without asking, right? Now, I could ask in the 8th month something on the lines of, have you thought about time off or whatever? There's probably rules in a company, but if you're in a small company, you may not know, and you may need to ask from a standpoint of work. I wouldn't consider that to be prying. But I just think this desire to continue the conversation or to show that we care puts us in situations too often that we're overstepping, and the other person has the right to decide where those boundaries are.
It makes me think, a manager does need to know eventually when somebody is planning, when the predicted time off, since babies don't do what they're supposed to often. It's very different to say, I want to do some planning so that this goes smoothly, rather than, what day are you due?
Yeah, this is 10 years ago. I had an HR person say, Mark, what should I do? This manager asked. His direct was, in her 37th week or something like that. And the manager says, hey, can we talk about timing and planning? Because I know you're going to be out. I'm excited for you and so on. And the person immediately went to HR and said, you know, the manager crossed a boundary. And HR says, what do you think? And HR had already supported the direct. And now the manager was told, you can't ask anything. And I said, HR, I just told HR, you're totally wrong. He, in this case, it was a he, was asking about workload and capacity, which he has a responsibility to. He has an obligation to respect privacy. But when it's no longer private, when the discussion has been had, I'm due to give birth around this time, the manager's not doing his or her job by choosing to respect the boundary that it doesn't, the impending pregnancy and birth doesn't exist.
Yeah, because it has an effect on work, right?
Yeah.
So while we're still on the subject of children.
And relationships.
And relationships, yes, generally.
You know, there's a famous musical agent, Irving Azoff, who's well known for his work with the Eagles. And I'm pretty sure it was him. It may actually have been David Geffen, who said in the great documentary, The History of the Eagles, he said, this agent stuff would be great if it weren't for the talent, right? Work would be great if it weren't for the people and the problems and the sensitivity and the landmines and so on. But this is what you have to learn. You have to adjust. It's funny how people say, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. We need to respect other people's cultures and so on. Uh-huh. But oh, by the way, when I'm at work, I'm just going to be my own culture. I'm not. There's no corporate culture. There's no organizational culture. It's all just a bunch of individuals. Well, folks, grow up. There is a culture and there are rules, and we're the ones sharing with you the rules. You may not like them, but there are rules that when I go to Paris or Rome or London or somewhere else that I'm not used to those rules. I try not to like them because I don't want to judge, but I have to be aware of how things are different. If for no other reason than looking down at the pavement in London and seeing a sign that says, look to your right, because the car is coming from your right and not from your left. Okay, so parenting.
So if you're a parent, you've probably heard these kind of things. You let your child watch that TV program?
Oh, believe me, I've said that and I've learned I can't say that anymore. But that is true for like 99% of what I hear people telling me, oh, my kids were watching Family Guy or something. I'm like, oh, come on, no.
Or you take your children to McDonald's. Yeah, mine are only fed organic, you know, handmade, hand-woven, hand-knitted pasta. Or your child isn't walking yet, or you haven't started college applications yet, because this goes on. It's not just the babies. People comment on your children's abilities until they're not your children anymore. And they all come from well-meaning people in all directions.
Yeah. Let me take it a step further. There's somebody, at least one, perhaps as many as 1,000 people listening right now, say, this is too hard. I'll tell you what, if I find one of my colleagues, one of my directs, we'll use the example of a manager, who for some reason, one of your direct's kids are in the office for a couple hours one afternoon. There are probably some rules that say in some places you can't do that. But in most places, for a couple of hours, it's not the end of the world. It shouldn't be every day all afternoon. There are rules and they vary by degrees in places all over the world. The most famous one recently is Marissa Mayer at Yahoo before Yahoo got sold, that she had a room for her child, and she brought her child to work all day. So there's all kinds of rules about this. But if you think that this podcast, which talks about all these sensitivities and how to moderate your behavior to achieve professional success with the minimum of creating your own problems of friction with colleagues, if you think this is too much, and so therefore you think when your direct's child is in the office, you can walk down to the direct, ignore the child, the three-year-old who can speak, and talk to the direct and ignore the child because you wouldn't want to say the wrong thing, you're also wrong about that. Mm-hmm. The smart manager goes, hey, do you have a second? And you're sensitive to the fact that their child is in the office. And maybe you sit down on the floor and say, hey, dude, how's it going? What's going on? You know, your mom's great. And, oh, by the way, what'd you do in school today? Or, hey, how was your day? Right? By the way, those are normal things that any adult would say to any child. It would shock me if a director said, please don't speak to my child. But the idea that you would have a completely professional, almost antiseptic conversation with one of your directs while their child is there and ignore the child is also ludicrous.
Right.
We have to have boundaries and we can show respect for the other human being in the room. We have an entire Manager Tools cast called the Direct Relationship Acid Test, which is, do you know the first names of all the children who report to you? Do you know the first name of all the children of the people who report to you?
Because that's the most important thing to them.
Hey, Robbie, how are you? Yeah, hey, Brenda, how are you? What's up? How's it going? High five, dude. Yeah, normal.
So I'm going to say this not as a parent, but as an observer. Parenting is hard. Children are hard, and parents and children are all different, and what one parent might do with one child might even not be the same as they do with another child.
Well, that better I be think. True.
As an eldest child, I, of course, I think that my brothers were given an extraordinary amount of leniency. But each parent and child relationship is different, and parents are doing their best.
Yes.
So unless you're a child psychologist in a professional session with a parent,
which you're not,
don't comment on people's parenting choices. Just don't. And don't even say, I'm sure you're doing your best, because that makes it sound like they're doing their best, but someone else could do it better.
Yeah, so let's give them some alternatives. You mentioned, don't say, you let your child watch that TV program. What would you have them say instead?
Oh, so Linus is into trains at the moment.
Yeah, because you're saying the TV show is about
trains. The TV show is about trains or boats or, you know how kids, like, they have an obsession for a while, right?
Or look, I mentioned Family Guy, which I wouldn't let my kids watch. Folks, I'm not judging you. So I would say, hey, cartoons.
Right? Yeah.
Because I grew up on Saturday morning cartoons. Every Saturday morning, me and my brothers would sit and watch Saturday cartoons. And I'm told that they were terribly violent, like the Roadrunner and the Coyote and the Roadrunner was this horribly violent show. I just thought it was funny. I'm sure there's some statistics somewhere that increase the chances by 0.04%, which is statistically significant, that I would likely be more violent in my adult life. But I think that's a load of hooey. But anyway. Okay. So what about you take your children to McDonald's?
You know, I always wish I could get one of those child's meals when I go to McDonald's, or I really like their burgers once in a while, or it's great when you can just go there and have your dinner in 5 minutes flat when you're busy.
Yeah, I would love for someone to have said to me, you take your child to McDonald's, which is a way judgy thing to say, because here's what I would say. I would say, when my oldest daughter was 5 and got cancer and nearly died, my family took our kids, we were 4 of us, we went into McDonald's, and our bald-headed daughter, through chemotherapy, was longingly looking out the window at the McDonald's Playland and couldn't go because she was immunocompromised. And the next thing I know, the manager on duty walked outside, shooed all the kids out of that Playland, and came up to us and said, if you'd like to play now, you can. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you may disagree with McDonald's food choices, but as far as I'm concerned, McDonald's has a soft spot in my heart. And so if somebody were to say that to me, I'd probably say, you're damn right I do. And probably, now that I'm older, I'd probably say something like, you can go pound sand with your judgment of me. Which, by the way, folks, I know that's not politically correct, and I'm not in a larger organization, so I can probably say that. And I certainly wouldn't say that to my boss. But the point is, you're stepping into a gray area that's really closer to black in the modern organizational world when you start questioning how people parent their kids in terms of what they eat. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about, your child isn't walking yet?
Have you got a picture? Oh, what a cute outfit you chose for him. He's lovely blonde hair.
Yeah. Or, you know what? Isn't with phones. I remember when I was a kid, and I'm older, folks, so maybe you can't say, when I was a kid, we didn't have that many pictures. Now, thanks to phones, got tons of pictures of your kids.
Yeah.
I saw my brother's kids or my nephew's kids. Awesome. They've got hundreds of pictures of their kids. Awesome. What about you've not started college applications yet?
He got a part-time job? Congratulations. That's really good for him. Oh, I hear he's doing well in school, or, he seems well-adjusted. Anything, you don't, like, there's a million reasons why a college-age kid who is in the time band for making applications is not making applications.
Yeah.
And you don't need to know what it is, and they don't need to tell you what it is. And so just find something positive to say.
As you look down your nose, they say, no, he just enlisted in the Marines.
Yes.
You just got trumped, Bubba. I'm sorry you did. I'll tell you something else. I often tell this to parents when people say, I have good friends here at home and they have a new grandbaby. And I met the mom for the first time, the daughter-in-law. And I said, oh, your baby is so cute. And she says, oh, all babies are cute. I said, yeah, isn't it great? Isn't that a great thing? And I said, I want you to know something. As a father of seven, there will be people who will tell you that when they're two, it's terrible. Terrible twos. And then when they're five. And then when they're eight, when they're 13. Let me assure you, don't listen to those people. My entire experience raising kids, including having one with cancer, is that it was nothing but the greatest joy in my world. And I've had a lot of joy out of work. Don't get me wrong. Those people who say at two and five and eight and the teens are all terrible, those people, you know, when you give them a brand new Ferrari, they complain about the color or the fact that they already have a small car. There are people who are just negative and they're always going to be negative. This will be a fabric. If it's one-tenth of the experience I have, you're going to have so much joy. You're going to be thankful to the end of time. And the only thing better than raising kids is being able to learn about them as young adults. So I'm slightly envious of the next 20 years of your life because you will get more out of it than you put into it. Even on those nights when you feel like you have no more to give, I'm just telling you, congratulations, and I hope you have great joy. And I probably said that 100 times to young parents, and their eyes just get real big, and you know, because while the kid is with you in a public space and maybe the child is sleeping, the infant is sleeping, then they go home and then the infant who's probably had a different schedule now is crying at 10 o'clock at night and the parent has to be at work the next morning and he or she is worried about being up till midnight or 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock feeding or something like that. So spreading a little bit of joy about kids and not judging why they're doing what they're doing is probably a much easier way to go through life. And it's certainly easier for the parents, I can assure you.
A lot positive. That also makes me think, you know, if you're a manager who has a new parent on your team and they come in a bit late one morning, just give them some grace, right? Don't ask them, was the kid crying all night? Just say, it's good to see you. Do you want a coffee?
Yeah, a little bit of forgiveness goes a long way. Well, we've been going for a good bit. I didn't expect this one to go that long, but we probably need to do a part three.
We do. We'll do a part three.
Good. We'll see you next week, folks.